from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
The veteran comes set and fired. Swing and a miss. Strike three. 1-2-3 for Neris.
Big bullpen work yesterday for the Cubs was also featured in that 1-0 win over the Pirates. Welcome back into Hit and Run. I'm Mark Grody right here on The Score. If you want to jump in here, see your texts rolling in. I've had several good phone calls this morning. I am available to you until 12:45 today at 312-644-6767. Matt Spiegel will join us at 11:25, the regular host of Hit and Run. He will be doing pre and post. Pre-game starting again at 12:45. He'll be doing the fifth inning, so we'll get the scene setter from Spiegs and talk Cubs and talk play-by-play with him coming up here in just a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sleep on that. I mean, with Shota Imanaga absolutely stole the show with his 7 shutout innings yesterday, but in a 1-0 game, and I get it, the Pirates are not the Bronx Bombers by any means, to have flawless bullpen work feels like the way things have gone at times this year felt like a bit of a luxury yesterday. Mark Leiter was terrific. The light show was on, struck out the side in the 8th inning. Hector Neris with a couple of strikeouts in the 9th inning. I don't know if, you know, hopefully that this is one of those games that you say, can we take, I know it's fun to call Hector Neris heart attack Hector, but it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. You don't want to keep seeing two men on base before
the heart attack Hector.
Yeah, you don't want that. It sounds great. I love alliterations. I learned alliterations at Illinois State University. You got to learn your alliterations. There's no doubt about it. But Hector, we don't want heart attack Hector. But that's my goal for Hector Neris, to eliminate the heart attack portion of his name, because you just want a clean close. You can't play around a season in which the Cubs are expected to win. So I really wonder who will be closing games out by the end of the season. You know, Craig Counsell is used to having some guys that are really good at the end of the bullpen and preserving those guys until you absolutely need them. But it could be Neris. I mean, he was brought in as the backup that, hey, just in case Edward Alzolay stumbles a little bit, that we got to have Hector Neris standing by because he has done this before. So that's what he's here for. And Alzolay right now on the deal, I have no idea what they're going to do with him when he gets back, if he ever does get back. But that is something still that needs to be tightened up and assured. And maybe they are bringing Ben Brown along, maybe at the perfect rate to eventually put him in the 9th inning in most games this year. I think that is probably one of the more likely candidates to pitch in the 9th. Maybe Wesneski, Hayden Wesneski. I don't think that's completely out of the realm of possibility. But I think it's very possible that the closer for the Chicago Cubs, by the time August hits or September, is not on the roster right now. 312-644-6767, a text from the 847. Grody, why are the Cubs a lock to win the Central Division? The Brewers didn't skip a beat, even without the most and greatest manager who Cubs overpaid. And I'm a Cub fan. Score personalities should tone it down. Way over the top, Richard. Richard, thank you for the text. Hey, Brewers have played really good baseball. I mean, they have a style of baseball that is about hustle and speed and timeliness and all of that. So I do think that they're going to be tough to beat. There's no doubt. I think I'm not expecting the Cubs to run away with this division. I just think at the end of the day, pound for pound, if the Cubs get their bleep together, that they're going to be the better team. That's kind of the way I've characterized the Cubs this year. They've been good, but they don't have their bleep together as of yet. And I think PCA used the word bleep a little bit earlier today as well. He lives for this bleep. Yes, he does. So that's why I think that is the case. But yeah, the Cubs are, you know, they are still two games behind the Milwaukee Brewers at this point. So until further notice, and the Brewers played well against the Cubs, until further notice, you've got to say that the Brewers are the team to beat right now in the National League Central. Couple of things on the White Sox from yesterday. We talked about the day that Juan Soto had 4-for-4 with a couple home runs. Yankees win it 6-5. And Tommy Pham continues to produce for the White Sox. I believe he was their player of the game again yesterday. Pham 2-for-4, hitting .346. And I know you're not going to get like something like incredible back for him, but that's another way to watch the White Sox. You have to look at guys that are thriving, that you don't think are going to be part of the core future of this team, and that's clearly the case with Pham. Don't expect him to be around when the Sox are winning. So that's a guy that you have to start to think about, what can I get for somebody like Tommy Pham out there? So he continues to be really good for the 14-32 Chicago White Sox, who, yeah, they just got the full Yankees experience yesterday. Juan Soto 4-for-4, Giancarlo Stanton a home run, Jose Trevino with a home run as well. That was the most interesting. Like, sometimes, man, I mean, we all know it's 318 to left field at Yankee Stadium, but when guys just whipped that baseball out of the park and it went into to the front row of the bleachers, it was just kind of wild to see that the Jose Trevino home run against the White Sox yesterday. 312-644-6767. Ben is in Racine. What's up, Ben? You're on the Score.
Yeah, okay. Don't worry about Craig Counsell, okay? You're only two games behind, okay? So that's not nothing to worry about. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I got it done. Don't worry about Craig Counsell. Now, I'm actually not worried about him. Like I said, he's still figuring things out, and I don't think it's fair to like come up with some grand conclusion on Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, in May, when we've all seen what has happened. Like, sometimes people like act like they're not seeing what has gone on with this roster and literally what Craig Counsell has had to manage to the point where they're 25-21, and they're 26-21. There's been mistakes that Craig Counsell has made, and I laid out a couple, leaving guys in too long. But on the overall, the idea that Craig Counsell has struggled, like the previous texter or caller had said, I think that's a little preposterous at this point. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate the call. David is in Richmond. David, you're on the Score.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, David. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just called because it seems like every year the Cubs don't address relief pitching at all, and the Bears don't address the offensive line at all.
Bears.
And why the hell is Hendricks still pitching for the Cubs? That guy should be dropped. He's an old man. Does he throw over 80 miles an hour? What's his ERA, like 14 now?
I love the exaggeration. 14, what's he throwing, like 50 miles per hour? Come on. Give me a break.
The sad thing is I think his ERA is like 12 now.
I guess it is, isn't it? God, you can't follow. Like that's why we're with the Shota thing. Like, it's nice to talk about his .86 ERA, but we all know it's not going to be .86. And I'd like to think Kyle Hendricks will eventually clean some things up. It is a problem, though. It is a complicated situation with Kyle Hendricks. And, you know, you had Craig Counsell talking about it yesterday, and he's not making any promises. You know, he's talking about it is a concern, and he didn't sound confident from what I heard from Craig Counsell yesterday in talking about what is next for Kyle Hendricks. Is he going to make his next start? Do they need to sit him down again? The way I would handle Kyle Hendricks right now is yes, I would definitely give him another start. I don't think that that performance was not good by him against the Pirates. The 4 2/3, 7 runs against the Pirates in the Paul Skeens game. Not good. Not good at all. But you give this guy, I think, at least one more, maybe two. But my gut says one. If things are still not going well, then you say, well, you gave it a chance. And then I don't know what you do, because is not exactly a guy that I don't think you put somebody like Kyle Hendricks in the bullpen. It doesn't really seem like he would be a great fit for that. The idea of a DFA or letting him go, like, that's where it gets complicated because of the past, not just because of the fact that he did what he did or has done what he has done as a pitcher, but also just because this guy has, you know, been a great clubhouse person as well, and he's always managed to figure it out in years that we thought he was going downhill, and oh man, the 90 mile per hour fastball is finally catching up with him. And then the next game, he'd go to San Diego and pitch a 1-0 shutout. So there's that part where we're all like, is this really it for you? It's almost like the Alzolay thing. Did you really lose it in the ninth inning? And that's where I am with Kyle Hendricks at this point. Here's Craig Counsell on Kyle Hendricks.
Does he stay in the rotation for them?
I mean, I think we got to look at the start a little closer and see what's going on. You know, we're in a tough stretch right now. I mean, we've got eight pitchers on the injured list. You know, that Kyle's, you know, we've got to keep doing our best to help Kyle turn the corner. I think that's going to be really important here in the stretch we're in. You know, we're going to need innings.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we have to consider everything. I think that's what we should do. And then consider the situation that we're in kind of with the rest of the pitching. So it's definitely something over the next couple of days that we're assessing for sure. I think the off day provides us some space here and kind of thinking about it. And I do think, like, taking some time to think about it is the right thing to do as well. Again, we're in a spot, you know, I said this yesterday, but we're in a spot where, you know, we need Kyle's innings right now. We've got injury issues, right? And so that, I think that's part of this conversation for sure. But we have to also consider everything, and because we've got to do better.
Everything is possible, but I think the overriding part, from what I infer from what Craig Counsell is saying right there, is we have no choice. We have to keep putting until Cade Horton is ready, or one of these guys that is injured right now, that until they start to come back, we have to put this guy out. There are eight pitchers out. You know, I think Jordan Wicks is another guy that, and I talked about this yesterday, you just assume Jordan Wicks is going to come back, plug him right into the starting rotation, he's going to be fine. He's been up and down. I mean, last year started off with a bang and then kind of faded off. So far this year, he's been okay when he was playing. And, you know, we're going to find out what he's all about. But there's no guarantee that Jordan Wicks is the answer, even when he does get healthy. And, you know, so the idea that part of what he was saying there in context was the possibility of the bullpen. So everything is on the table. The one thing about Craig Counsell is he doesn't have that nostalgia effect like maybe David Ross would have had when it comes to Kyle Hendricks. And he knows all about Kyle Hendricks. But I don't think it's as personal with him as it would be with David Ross, or obviously with Ross's predecessor, Joe Maddon. So if he has to make some sort of heartless decision, I think that he'd probably be more capable than both his predecessors. And most of us talking about him, and I talked about this yesterday, when Hendricks walked out of that game the other day on Friday, you know, massive crowd out there at Wrigley Field, beautiful day. He gets hit up, 7 runs. He's being pulled in the fifth inning. I'm thinking, how is this crowd going to react? And there just was nothing. You know, there was nobody wants to boo this guy. Maybe there was a few claps out there. And I think everybody gets it, that it's such a complicated situation. Nobody's ever going to boo Kyle Hendricks unless this is going on in September or October. But, you know, it's hard to know exactly how to handle Kyle Hendricks considering the track record in so many different ways. Mike is in Willow Springs. Hello, Mike. You're on Hit and Run.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. Listening to Bruce yesterday morning, he's 100% adamant that Hendricks should stay in the rotation. I very rarely disagree with Bruce, and I'm going to get a little bit more specific than the previous caller than just complaining. They're 2-5 in Hendricks' starts. Like you said, Hoyer made a very tough call with Council over Ross, and so far it looks really, really good. You listen to Council, and there's just a lot of depth and thought to what he's saying. I'm not knocking Ross. I'm just saying, not afraid to make the move, and you made the point about Council being fresh and not owing anybody. Here's the deal. I'll be very specific in how I say this. Wisniewski hasn't earned the spot. He's earned the opportunity. Mm. Big difference.
Yeah.
Give him a chance, 3, 4, 5 chances, and don't DFA Hendricks. Hendricks can be a long man. He's a team player. There's nothing wrong. Wisniewski is pitching lights out compared to Hendricks. And Council talks about they need the innings. How many innings is Hendricks giving them? He's not.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, all good points right there. And I like what you said about Hayden Wisniewski as well, because we've seen him thrive this year as a starter and this year as a reliever. It's fascinating and intriguing to think about what they're going to do with these guys. And, you know, I think for the first time, I mean, even the first time in a long time, you have a manager who seems to have just as much or maybe even a little more power than the GM. At least they're talking about working in conjunction. Clearly, that wasn't the case at the end of the Joe Maddon era. And I always felt like with David Ross, especially in the beginning, part of that was, yeah, we're going to give you this job, but we're going to hold your hand a little bit. And I'm sure that Ross was happy to accept that. Going to take a break here in a second. One more text here. Please address that idiot's point about the Bears not addressing the offensive line in every year. Well, that's a good point. I mean, they did bring in Ryan Bates. They did bring in Coleman Shelton. They did draft Darnell Wright last year. So I'm a little concerned about the Bears at center, though, at this point, going into the rookie series for Caleb Williams, that they don't know exactly who their center is going to be. That scares me just a little bit. And that will conclude our football talk for today.
You switched the samples.
So you can make Provasic. I understand that baseball people get very offended on the Matt Spiegel Hit and Run show when you try to slide in a little, because sometimes the Bears overtake Hit and Run. I understand that's a problem. So that will be it for me on Bears Talk for today.
Very sensitive subject.
Oh, yeah. I get it. I understand. Hey, man, I love baseball too. But, you know, Bears. Coming up next, we've got Matt Spiegel live from Wrigley Field. It's his show. He will join us next on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Go to Bellinger. Linesman down the left field line. That's going to be a base hit. It goes toward the corner. It's going to be a ground rule double. A ground rule double for Cody Bellinger. There's the potential winning run at second base with one away. Bottom of the ninth inning. A smash down the opposite field line in left.
Allison Chains. Always sounds good to me. Cubs go on to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 1-0 out of Wrigley Field. Shota Imanaga, excellent. Christopher Morel with a nice piece of hitting, just ripped it up the middle. And Cody Bellinger chugging around third base to score the only run of the game. Cubs 26-21, getting ready to rematch with the Pirates today at 1:20. Jameson Taillon 3-1 with a 1.61 against Mitch Keller, 4-3 with a 3.93 ERA. Pre-game for Cubs and Pirates begins at 12:45, and the man who will be performing that pregame is the one and only Matt Spiegel. He is the host of this very show, Hit and Run, which I am filling in today. It also says right here on the sheet put together by Sean Sears Spiegs, it says, accomplished musician, vocalist, sports broadcaster, and in his home you'll find many leather-bound books and a musk of rich mahogany.
Yeah, the leather-bound book's not true anymore. There have been some downsizing of the book collection. But Mark Grody, thanks for hosting. And whenever I'm asked to be a guest on my own show, I don't feel like I have the right to say no. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be very awkward if you said, no, not interested. I don't really like that show. I'm on that show, but I don't particularly like that show.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful day here at Wrigley Field, and we're having bagels in the booth. Ron Coomer and Jim DeShays are here. Paul Zerang is here. Who's got it better than us?
That's awesome. Say hi to all of those three guys. They are spectacular.
Agreed.
Zerang up there, man. He is an ace. Pat and Ron, absolutely love it, man.
It should be a tremendous day, and we'll see what Jamison Tyone can do to back up a phenomenal effort from Shota Imanaga and that thrilling finish that you were talking about. The whole place kind of buzzing about both Shota and the start and also that finish. Can I tell you something that I love about baseball? I love that Shota Imanaga's start. Obviously, it's the best first nine starts to begin a career in terms of ERA by anyone in the history of the game, beating Fernando Valenzuela in 1981. The other guy who's up there, and that name was bandied about a little bit yesterday, was Dave Ferris of the Red Sox. It's Boo Ferris, and I know the name because my dad was 12 in 1945 and absolutely loved Boo Ferris and that team. And Boo Ferris, he won two games of the 1946 World Series, and like texting your 91-year-old father about Shota Imanaga and Boo Ferris on a Saturday afternoon in May.
Oh, man.
It's pretty good. Gets pretty good.
They're not right booing. Now. They're saying boo.
They're cheering for a man named Boo. Yeah.
That must have been very complicated.
I think so. Well, he was good.
Yeah.
So he never got booed.
Yeah.
So, that must have worked out in his favor. But anyway, none of that is why you called.
What was the buzz in the clubhouse today after yesterday's victory with the players?
Saw Nico Horner, who said, I'll be getting in there soon. And
okay.
We've already heard from Craig Counsell. They're targeting Tuesday, so Nico will get the benefit of the off day tomorrow after this last off day today. So Cubs hopefully not going to be a man down. Just watched Dansby Swanson here take BP and run to first a couple of times. So you wonder if Tuesday you're getting both of the starting middle infielders back. It's certainly possible. And if not, Tuesday for Dansby, maybe a little bit later in the week. But that would be obviously very welcome for an offense that is extremely cold at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And other than sitting guys down and kind of resetting them, it's always complicated when guys aren't hitting because you feel like eventually they just will start hitting because of the track record. And one of the things that one of our topics today is, you know, the way I characterize the Cubs have been good, but they don't have their bleep together yet. Like just because of whether injuries, ineffectiveness, every single possible thing has happened to the Cubs this year in dramatic fashion. And the question that I've been asking is once July hits and August hits, when you're really in the heart of the competition of the season, if this team is back together, injuries in place, what do you think it is capable of relative to the fact that they've managed to be five games over 500 with all that is going on?
Yeah, it feels like we've been in this space now for a few weeks, Mark, where we're all looking around and saying, you know, 16 guys have been on the injured list, everything that has gone wrong, and here they are still decent, and that all bodes well. And it's true that it bodes well, but you want to hit July and certainly August and September knowing who you are. And I don't think this team knows who it is just yet. Certainly in the bullpen, they know they've got a really good starting rotation. Even with the injuries, people have stepped up. And, some question at five with Hendricks, but maybe that's Jordan Wicks, or maybe it's all six of them for a little while. But what role is Ben Brown going to have in that bullpen? Are they going to go out and get somebody? Are roles going to churn a little bit more as they sort of sort out what they are? Is Luke Little the lefty, or is Mark Leiter really the de facto lefty because of his reverse splits? And will they play cleaner defensively? Because we've assumed that they will since they did last year, and that's kind of the ethos of the org, but they're not. So if you don't do that, then you really got to be explosive offensively to cover some of that stuff up, and they're not. So, but look, it's a healthy organization, it's a smart manager, and it is a group of guys who know how to play hard and how to adjust. So it all does bode well, but as the clock keeps ticking, the patience is harder to have for them to play like the full bloom of themselves that we believe they can be.
I thought maybe the most important part of the game yesterday, look, Shota Imanaga was important, and that was spectacular, and it's amazing what this guy is doing, getting that ERA down to 0.84. But Mark Leiter coming in the eighth, striking out the side, and then Hector Neris in the ninth with two strikeouts, both fist pump inducing moments for that bullpen, just a little point in time because of all the breakdowns this bullpen has had this year, to get those two guys doing what they did yesterday, especially Neris, I thought was incredibly important.
Yeah, and Neris has a long track record of being very good, and I know that people have been scared of him. You've got the heart attack Hector thing that Hayden Wesneski gave us, but I don't know. Like, I watch Neris, and I feel like that dude just battles and finds a way to get out of a mess, even if he creates it sometimes. So he doesn't make me as nervous as some others. And then, but yesterday, him with that perfect ninth was big. And here's a tease. Be listening to pregame with Bruce Levine has more on Hector. Apparently addressed the team after the game yesterday, and it was emotional and impactful. So we'll be hearing from another player talking about Hector in Bruce Levine's report as part of pregame.
Oh, that's fantastic. We're talking to Matt Spiegel, who will be hosting the pregame starting at 12:45. He'll be doing the fifth inning of play-by-play and then performing the postgame afterwards. So Spieg's coming up in a little bit, 12:45, to get this thing going. And you mentioned Jameson Taillon, 3-1, 161. And look, he was up and down last year, injured to begin this year, but terrific. How big would it be if that guy, you know, shows, you know, acts like he has prior to last year in his career? That's a really good product.
Yeah, no, I think so. And and let's not forget this. Today's against his old team, and you know, the whole league, and certainly the Pirates, a buzz about their young pitchers. Bailey Falter was good yesterday. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Skeens the day before, and Jared Jones on Friday. There was a time when Taillon was in that farm system along with Tyler Glasnow and Garrett Cole, all of them kind of arriving at the same time. So, you know, he's been that guy before. And now after a long career and a good run in New York, even with the struggles last year, he knows who he is and he knows how to be the best version of himself. I think he's been terrific this year, other than that, you know, obviously that choppy Braves start. But he would give the Cubs three starters if he can qualify in terms of the inning total. Three starters with an ERA under two to go along with Assad and Shota. And that's where Jameson Taillon is. So I expect a real good deep run by him today.
What's your take on Kyle Hendricks? What do you do with Kyle Hendricks?
You keep giving him shots because you have to have Wesneski and Brown in the bullpen. So you keep giving Kyle a chance. And you hope to get, you know, hope to get five innings out of him. And maybe he can figure out a little something as he goes from start to start. It's when Jordan Wicks gets back that you might see Kyle skipped every once in a while, or you may them see them go to six man. And really, we say six man rotation, but really what we're saying is 5 days rest for pitchers.
Sure.
You know, Pirates just did it for Skeens. They're trying to do it for Shota often. So that being the goal, that means there will be a spot necessary, and you'd rather have that in that sixth start, rather that be Hendricks than Wesneski, who can help you as a bulk guy out of that pen.
And then, you know, Justin Steele, I'm personally not worried about him, despite having struggled in his last couple of starts. Is there anything that you think that he's done differently? Any concern about Justin Steele?
I haven't done a deep dive on some of, like, you know, the stuff that might give you a window in terms of the pitch shape or sequencing or anything like that. All I know is dude was giving up rockets a couple of games in a row.
Yeah.
A lot of rockets, even the outs, you know, some deep flies, obviously some bombs and some doubles. So a little concerning to see all those, you know, all those barrels off Justin, but I'm not sure if folks smarter than me have figured anything out.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I just because his velocity is all still there, We're seeing that location seemed a little bit off. And for the first time, like watching him, something I never really noticed last year, he looked flustered in his last start. Yeah. And that was because of the wind. Even on an out, he looked like kind of shaking his head. And I'm thinking, you pitched a year and a half at Wrigley Field. You've got to know that sometimes baseballs get up into the jet stream. But I don't remember him ever really kind of like having that shake your head moment on the mound last year.
Yeah, I don't either. I'll ask around.
Okay.
I'll ask around first in this room if the cream cheese and the bagels have kept Jim Shea. Oh, yep, still here.
Oh,
Jamie's
beautiful.
Still here. So I have some of the finest Cubs minds. They're hovering. Some of the finest Cubs mind are hovering near bagels.
Is there salmon in that? There's got to be lox in there. So I don't
there's
know.
There's no salmon.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Poor Pat. Asparagus? No
Mark
asparagus?
Brody making me feel bad. There's no cucumbers, no tomatoes. I know. Coombs says, Southside, the bagel is plenty. You know?
Oh, yeah. Like
you accept the bagel happily and move it along.
Oh, you know, Sundays were always my favorite in the booth because the it was brunch, so I'd load up on – I'd go with the scrambled eggs, a big plate of bacon, sausages,
nice.
And about 15 cups of coffee.
Yeah, yeah, I'm on cup three. So you know, be tuned in just to see how buzzed pregame can be, and I'll try to settle it down for the fifth inning when I get on the moving train briefly.
Oh man, I know that you're going to be pumped up for that, dude. What else is cooking on the pre? You said you got Bruce with the backstage medium. Did you get a player interview or a broadcaster interview? What do we got cooking on that pregame speak?
Let's get to know Porter Hodge.
Oh
brand
yeah,
new Cubs reliever. Shall we?
I love it.
Yeah, we'll talk to Porter Hodge and get to know him from a personality standpoint, and we'll dive deep on the fastball as well.
I love it, Spiegs. I'll let you get back to your baseball booth roundtable in there so you guys could figure everything out to begin this game today.
Grody, you're the best. Remember, there's always a bagel for you in my heart.
Oh, okay? Yeah, I'm sure. Bring that bagel in whenever you get a chance. Thanks, Spiegs.
All right, Mark.
Yep, see you later. That is Matt Spiegel, who will be doing pre and post today for the Cubs. Like he said, it'll be the fifth inning. Yeah, man, like some of the fun times in that Cubs booth, just hanging out. Just once a lot of your pregame work is done, just hang out, kick it, talk to some baseball guys. And then you always have people dropping in, like from the other booths that will pop in and say hi. And, you know, Ron Coomer knows everybody. So it's a fun vibe there at Wrigley Field on Sundays for sure. When we return, we're going to talk some more White Sox and their loss to the Yankees yesterday, 6-1. But a very, very prominent former White Sox player threw out the first pitch in New York at the White Sox-Yankees game yesterday. We'll tell you who it was and tell you all about him coming up next here on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
This is baseball here. They know it there. And 3-2 pitch. Oh, he gets him to go. And the White Sox, El Duque, goes charging off as well he should. He comes in with the bases loaded and gets Veritek, Graffinino, and Damon. Just enough. 4-3 Chicago.
One of the most important pitching performances in White Sox history. That is not hyperbole. That, which you just heard right there, forgot that Chris Berman was doing those games on ESPN. I never heard the broadcast because I was there. But that was, ladies and gentlemen, the 2005 American League Division Series in Boston, the White Sox and the Red Sox, Game 3. That was in the sixth inning. The White Sox were up 4-3 was the score. And here's the thing. El Duque, Orlando Hernandez, came in, replaces Damaso Marte, bases loaded, nobody out. He comes in this tense situation, Fenway Park. He retires Jason Veritek. He retires the former White Sox, Tony Raffanino, and then goes full count with Johnny Damon before he struck him out. And the rest is history because they win that series in Boston, do the White Sox. They go on to Anaheim, where I got to sit in the on the right field side, just about 10 rows up from first base. That was my favorite press box of all time, covering the White Sox and Angels in the American League Championship Series in 2005 because overflow media. They don't have room, especially a ballpark like that was around for a long time. They do not have enough room to accommodate all of the media. So just like at Wrigley Field, they literally would put us outside. And it was it's Anaheim. It was just gorgeous. And they set you up a little table in the stands. And it was great. It was beautiful, covering baseball essentially in the stands. I don't know, to be locked in a press box with glass, you know, shielding everything. That was fantastic. So yeah, the Sox win the ALCS, and then they of course win the World Series in Houston, and they were champs that year. And they absolutely don't get there that year without El Duque. And I bring all this up just because it was Orlando Hernandez who threw out the first pitch yesterday at the White Sox-Yankees game. So, yeah, I mean, that's where he started his career with the Yankees. Apparently, he works with some of the young international players with the Yankees, so he is employed by the New York Yankees and a fan favorite there as well. And the White Sox will never forget what Orlando El Duque Hernandez did in 2005. That was just a blast. It was completely improbable. For that game, by the way, in Boston, you know, with Fenway Park being the oldest ballpark, and you talk about not being able to accommodate the media, they had me along with probably about 50 other media members for that series in the cafeteria watching the game on television. So didn't even get to sit, you know, actually see live action. It was sitting there, you know, it's fine. I mean, you don't get the proper ambiance and you don't get to see all the things that you want to see right away, but that was definitely an experience. I remember talking to Peter Gammons a lot, you know, obviously being very close with the Boston Red Sox and covering them. I was working for WBBM at the time, but that was just all the way around was an absolutely unique experience. Then on to Houston, all my pregame stuff, I did sitting out in the bleachers in Houston doing live reports for BBM. That was cool. But they did have that was a relatively new ballpark then. They had a very accommodating press box, and what a fascinating, impressive, I was going to say improbable, but that was a talented White Sox team. I don't take anything away from what they did. I take away from what they did in the years preceding that year, but it was great, and the Orlando Hernandez, just a great White Sox moment. I got another history thing on the Sox, but let's bring it back to the present day because we've been talking about Kyle Hendricks. We have a couple people waiting. So John in Logan Square, bless you for your patience. You are on the Score. How are you, sir?
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for taking my call, Mark. I wanted to mention a couple things kind of on like a higher strategic sort of level. I think the Cubs have kind of figured out a couple things. One is a new market inefficiency. I think as you're seeing ball clubs focus on velocity from their pitchers, right? Look what we just saw from Cease all the way through the Pirates rotation. The Cubs don't have a lot of those guys, and the Cubs also aren't seeing a lot of injuries as well. And I think when you look at a Skeens, you look at some of these other folks, they're going to get hurt.
Yeah, Jared Jones, another guy with the Pirates.
Yep. Yeah, they're going to get hurt. It's unfortunate, but it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's something that's going to happen. And so they got guys like Assad and Wisniewski and Shota, and these guys know how to pitch, and they're athletic, and they're giving them innings, and they're winning games. Additionally, I think, you know, the partnership with Council is really valuable because the money they spent to sign him doesn't count against their payroll. And he's basically like hiring another front office executive.
Totally.
One who gets to work in the dugout. And so I think they know what they're doing. I think they have a model that we're not sure we understand because we don't see the big picture. But I think they're successful. And I think what they're doing right now is all part of their larger plan.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a really good call. One of the things that I've wondered about Jed Hoyer and Craig Counsell is, although I fully believe that these two guys get along swimmingly, I wonder what the things are that they disagree on. If Craig Counsell is, as they have said, like one with the front office and has a big say, and that's part of why Jed Hoyer, you know, hired him. I mean, he was transparent about that. And they have said, of course we disagree. Craig Counsell has said that on these airways. I am curious as to, because there's a lot of fine points with this Cubs team this year, a lot of debatable places. And one of the big ones right now, I wonder what the talk was with Alzolay. Was it Craig Counsell's decision to continue to use him in high leverage? Was Jed Hoyer saying, come on, you got to give this guy another try? I'm not saying that it ever got ugly or anything, but I do wonder, like, sometimes what the balance is between those two guys in the decisions that they are making. And I hadn't really thought about the fact that the Cubs don't really have a blow-you-away guy who is a legit starter, like in terms of velocity, and that you could, as you're doing, making the point that maybe there isn't that chaotic injury for the Cubs because of that, because Javier Saad is not going to blow you away. Same with Shota Imanaga. I mean, it's like that. They're not slow pitch. Like Justin Steele throws 94. We know about Kyle Hendricks. Tyone can get it up there a little bit as well. But your point is well taken, except for the fact that at least three of these guys have been injured at some point in time, but not the catastrophic injury for sure. So I get you, and that's a really good call. 312-644-6767 if you want to jump in here. The other White Sox thing, as we go back and forth seamlessly here, let me take you back now. We took you to 2005. Let me take you back now to 1990, ladies and gentlemen. You know I love the 90s. I went to an event the other night at the Chicago History Museum on Clark over there. It was about the 1990 White Sox, and there was a book that was written called Last Comiskey. That was a wild year for the White Sox. That was the final year of Old Comiskey Park, 1990, and it was an improbable season. That was when the White Sox were in the American League West, and you had the Bash Brother Oakland A's that were the class of the division. They were a loud, muscular team that we all knew about, but out of nowhere came the Chicago White Sox that year. They had been terrible in the years leading up to 1990. I mean, really awful. And then all of a sudden, the White Sox are right there with the Oakland A's that year. Sox ended up being 94-68, second place to the Oakland A's in that American League West. And unfortunately for the White Sox, that was when there was no wild card. So when they were eliminated, it was absolutely heartbreaking for White Sox fans because they have nothing to show for it. 94-68, and you've got to go home. So that's one of those things. Everybody complains about baseball and rules changes and all of that. What a win the wild card has been. I mean, you just can't do that. It's amazing it took as long as it did. You can't have a team be 94-68 with absolutely nothing to show for it. So I just thought that was indicative of what is going on with baseball and with the White Sox that year. Who was on those White Sox teams? You had a couple of the guys that were there that were at this event. Jack McDowell was there, Ron Kittle, and then Don Paul, the local product. He was one of the important bullpenners on that team as well. But of course, you remember Black Jack McDowell, and he was great. You know, he's got opinions, man. You know, and he was ripping on the idea that, you know, all the injuries, and he says it's because everybody's trying to throw too hard. But the lineup for the White Sox back in 1990, Lance Johnson was your center field. This is the opening day lineup, actually, that I'm looking at. Lance Johnson, one dog, playing center field. Scotty Fletcher, the second baseman, and batting second. Dan Bernstein's favorite baseball player of all time, Ivan Calderon, was batting third and playing left field. He was good. Greg Walker, he wasn't just a hitting coach, kids. He was the cleanup hitter and the DH, and he did play some first base as well. Carlton Fisk was the catcher and batting fifth. Carlos Martinez was the first baseman on opening day. Six hitter, Robin Ventura playing third base. Sammy Sosa was the right fielder. He was the Panther back then and batting seventh. Ozzie Guillen was the starting shortstop and batting eighth. And then on that day, they had Melito Perez as the starting pitcher for the White Sox that day. Bobby Thigpen was on that team. Scott Radinsky was on that team. Wayne Edwards on that team. Greg Graybeck, just going through some of those names. The Oakland A's were stacked back then because you had McGuire, you had Willie Randolph, Walt Weiss, Carney Langsford, Ricky Henderson, Dave Henderson, Jose Canseco. Harold Baines was on that Oakland A's roster as well. So, yeah, very, very impressive event the other day. The book was written by Ken Smoller. So shout out to everybody. Tom Scherer was up there hosting the thing. He did a fantastic job. Nancy Faust was out there with the organ playing. So it was one of those events. I didn't know what I was getting into, and it was just absolutely fantastic. They had this great documentary that they played. So I learned a lot, and I learned just how emotional that season was in 1990 for Chicago White Sox fans. Coming up next, we are going to talk to Paul Sullivan, sports writer for the Chicago Tribune. I bet he remembers that 1990 White Sox team, and I know he was covering Orlando, El Duque, Hernandez. And actually, maybe he wasn't back then. He was probably all over the Cubs. But we will talk to Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune next. I'm Mark Grody, filling in for Spiegel on Hit and Run on The Score.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
The veteran comes set and fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. 1-2-3 for Neris.
Big bullpen work yesterday for the Cubs was also featured in that 1-0 win over the Pirates. Welcome back into Hit and Run. I'm Mark Grody right here on The Score. If you want to jump in here, see your texts rolling in. We've had several good phone calls this morning. I am available to you until 12:45 today at 312-644-6767. Matt Spiegel will join us at 11:25, the regular host of Hit and Run. He will be doing pre and post. Pre-game starting again at 12:45. He'll be doing the fifth inning, so we'll get the scene setter from Spiegs and talk Cubs and talk play-by-play with him coming up here in just a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sleep on that. I mean, with Shota Imanaga absolutely stole the show with his 7 shutout innings yesterday, but in a 1-0 game, and I get it, the Pirates are not the Bronx Bombers by any means, to have flawless bullpen work feels like the way things have gone at times this year felt like a bit of a luxury yesterday. Mark Leiter was terrific. The light show was on, struck out the side in the 8th inning. Hector Neris with a couple of strikeouts in the 9th inning. I don't know if, you know, hopefully that this is one of those games that you say, can we take, I know it's fun to call Hector Neris heart attack Hector, but it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. You don't want to keep seeing two men on base before
attack Hector.
Yeah, you don't want that. It sounds great. I love alliterations. I learned alliterations at Illinois State University. You got to learn your alliterations. There's no doubt about it. But we don't want heart attack Hector. But that's my goal for Hector Neris, to eliminate the heart attack portion of his name, because you just want a clean close. You can't play around a season in which the Cubs are expected to win. So I really wonder who will be closing games out by the end of the season. You know, Craig Counsell is used to having some guys that are really good at the end of the bullpen and preserving those guys until you absolutely need them. But it could be Neris. I mean, he was brought in as the backup that, hey, just in case Edbert Alzolay stumbles a little bit, that we got to have Hector Neris standing by because he has done this before. So that's what he's here for. And Alzolay right now on the deal, I have no idea what they're going to do with him when he gets back, if he ever does get back. But that is something still that needs to be tightened up and assured. And maybe they are bringing Ben Brown along, maybe at the perfect rate to eventually put him in the ninth inning in most games this year. I think that that is probably one of the more likely candidates to pitch in the ninth. Maybe Hayden Wesneski. I don't think that that's completely out of the realm of possibility. But I think it's very possible that the closer for the Chicago Cubs, by the time August hits or September, is not on the roster right now. 312-644-6767, a text from the 847. Grody, why are the Cubs a lock to win the Central Division? The Brewers didn't skip a beat, even without the most and greatest manager who Cubs overpaid. And I'm a Cub fan. Score personalities should tone it down. Way over the top. Richard, thank you for the text. Hey, Brewers have played really good baseball. I mean, they have a style of baseball that is about hustle and speed and timeliness and all of that. So I do think that they're going to be tough to beat. There's no doubt. I think I'm not expecting the Cubs to run away with this division. I just think at the end of the day, pound for pound, if the Cubs get their bleep together, that they're going to be the better team. That's kind of the way I've characterized the Cubs this year. They've been good, but they don't have their bleep together as of yet. And I think PCA used the word bleep a little bit earlier today as well. He lives for this bleep. Yes, he does. So that's why I think that is the case. But yeah, the Cubs are, you know, they're still two games behind the Milwaukee Brewers at this point. So until further notice, and the Brewers played well against the Cubs, until further notice, you've got to say that the Brewers are the team to beat right now in the National League Central. Couple of things on the White Sox from yesterday. We talked about the day that Juan Soto had 4-for-4 with a couple home runs. Yankees win it 6-5. And Tommy Pham continues to produce for the White Sox. I believe he was their player of the game again yesterday. Pham 2-for-4, hitting .346. And I know you're not going to get like something like incredible back for him, but that's another way to watch the White Sox. You have to look at guys that are thriving, that you don't think are going to be part of the core future of this team, and that's clearly the case with Pham. Don't expect him to be around when the Sox are winning. So that's a guy that you have to start to think about, what can I get for somebody like Tommy Pham out there? So he continues to be really good for the 14-32 Chicago White Sox, who, yeah, they just got the full Yankees experience yesterday. Juan Soto 4-for-4, Giancarlo Stanton a home run, Jose Trevino with a home run as well. That was the most interesting. Like, sometimes, man, I mean, we all know it's 318 to left field at Yankee Stadium, but when guys just whipped that baseball out of the park and it went into the front row of the bleachers, it was just kind of wild to see that the Jose Trevino home run against the White Sox yesterday. 312-644-6767. Ben is in Racine. What's up, Ben? You're on the score.
Yeah, okay.
Don't worry about Craig Counsell, okay? You're only two games behind, okay? So that's nothing to worry about. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I got it done. Don't worry about Craig Counsell. No, I'm actually not worried about him. Like I said, he's still figuring things out, and I don't think it's fair to like come up with some grand conclusion on Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, in May when we've all seen what has happened. Like sometimes people like act like they're not seeing what has gone on with this roster and literally what Craig Counsell has had to manage to the point where they're 25-21 and they're 26-21. There's been mistakes that Craig Counsell has made, and I laid out a couple, leaving guys in too long. But on the overall, the idea that Craig Counsell has struggled, like the previous texter or caller had said, I think that's a little preposterous at this point. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate the call. David is in Richmond. David, you're on the Score.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, David. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just called because it seems like every year the Cubs don't address relief pitching at all, and the Bears don't address the offensive line at all.
Bears.
And why the hell is Hendricks still pitching for the Cubs? That guy should be dropped. He's an old man. Does he throw over 80 miles an hour? What's his ERA, like 14 now?
I love the exaggeration. 14, what's he throwing, like 50 miles per hour? Come on. Give me a break.
The sad thing is I think his ERA is like 12 now.
I guess it is, isn't it? God, you can't follow. Like that's why we're with the Shota thing. Like, it's nice to talk about his .86 ERA, but we all know it's not going to be .86. And I'd like to think Kyle Hendricks will eventually clean some things up. It is a problem, though. It is a complicated situation with Kyle Hendricks. And, you know, you had Craig Counsell talking about it yesterday, and he's not making any promises. You know, he's talking about it is a concern, and he didn't sound confident from what I heard from Craig Counsell yesterday in talking about what is next for Kyle Hendricks. Is he going to make his next start? Do they need to sit him down again? The way I would handle Kyle Hendricks right now is yes, I would definitely give him another start. I don't think that that performance was not good by him against the Pirates, the 4 2/3, 7 runs against the Pirates in the Paul Skeens game. Not good. Not good at all. But you give this guy, I think, at least one more, maybe two, but my gut says one. If things are still not going well, then you say, well, you gave it a chance. And then I don't know what you do, because it's not exactly a guy that I don't think you put somebody like Kyle Hendricks in the bullpen. It doesn't really seem like he would be a great fit for that. The idea of a DFA or letting him go, like, that's where it gets complicated because of the past, not just because of the fact that he did what he did or has done what he has done as a pitcher, but also just because this guy has, you know, been a great clubhouse person as well, and he's always managed to figure it out in years that we thought he was going downhill, and oh man, the 90-mile-per-hour fastball is finally catching up with him. And then the next game, he'd go to San Diego and pitch a 1-0 shutout. So there's that part where we're all like, is this really it for you? It's almost like the Alzolay thing. Did you really lose it in the ninth inning? And that's where I am with Kyle Hendricks at this point. Here's Craig Counsell on Kyle Hendricks.
Does he stay in the rotation for them?
I mean, I think we got to look at the start a little closer and see what's going on. You know, we're in a tough stretch right now. I mean, we've got eight pitchers on the injured list, you know, that Kyle's, you know, we've got to keep doing our best to help Kyle turn the corner, and I think that's going to be really important here in the stretch we're in. You know, we're going to need innings.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we have to consider everything. I think that's what we should do, and then consider the situation that we're in kind of with the rest of the pitching. So it's definitely something over the next couple of days that we're assessing for sure. I think the off day provides us some space here and kind of thinking about it, and I do think like taking some time to think about it is the right thing to do as well. Again, we're in a spot, you know, I said this yesterday, but we're in a spot where, you know, we need Kyle's innings right now. We've got injury issues, right? And so that, I think that's part of this conversation for sure. But we have to also consider everything, and because we've got to, you know, we've got to do better.
Everything is possible, but I think the overriding part, from what I infer from what Craig Counsell is saying right there, is we have no choice. We have to keep putting until Cade Horton is ready, or one of these guys that is injured right now, that until they start to come back, we have to put this guy out there. 8 pitchers out. You know, I think Jordan Wicks is another guy that, and I talked about this yesterday. You just assume Jordan Wicks is going to come back, plug him right into the starting rotation. He's going to be fine. He's been up and down. I mean, last year started off with a bang and then kind of faded off. So far this year, he's been okay when he was playing. And, you know, we're going to find out what he's all about. But there's no guarantee that Jordan Wicks is the answer, even when he does get healthy. And, you know, so the idea that part of what he was saying there in context was the possibility of the bullpen. So everything is on the table. The one thing about Craig Counsell is he doesn't have that nostalgia effect like maybe David Ross would have had when it comes to Kyle Hendricks. And he knows all about Kyle Hendricks. But I don't think it's as personal with him as it would be with David Ross, or obviously with Ross's predecessor, Joe Maddon. So if he has to make some sort of heartless decision, I think that he'd probably be more capable than both his predecessors and most of us talking about him. And I talked about this yesterday. When Hendricks walked out of that game the other day on Friday, in a massive crowd out there at Wrigley Field, beautiful day. He gets hit up, 7 runs. He's being pulled in the 5th inning. I'm thinking, how is this crowd going to react? And there just was nothing. You know, there was nobody wants to boo this guy. Maybe there was a few claps out there. And I think everybody gets it, that it's such a complicated situation. Nobody's ever going to boo Kyle Hendricks unless this is going on in September or October. But, you know, it's hard to know exactly how to handle Kyle Hendricks, considering the track record in so many different ways. Mike is in Willow Springs. Hello, Mike. You're on Hit and Run.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. Listening to Bruce yesterday morning, he's 100% adamant that Hendricks should stay in the rotation. I very rarely disagree with Bruce, and I'm going to get a little bit more specific than the previous caller than just complaining. They're 2-5 in Hendricks' starts. Like you said, Hoyer made a very tough call with Counsell over Ross, and so far it looks really, really good. You listen to Counsell, and there's just a lot of depth and thought to what he's saying. I'm not knocking Ross. I'm just saying, not afraid to make the move, and you made the point about Counsell being fresh and not owing anybody. Here's the deal. I'll be very specific in how I say this. Wisniewski hasn't earned the spot. He's earned the opportunity. Mm. Big difference.
Yeah.
Give him a chance, 3, 4, 5 chances, and don't DFA Hendricks. Hendricks can be a long man. He's a team player. There's nothing wrong. Wisniewski is pitching lights out compared to Hendricks. And Counsell talks about they need the innings. How many innings is Hendricks giving them? He's not.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, all good points right there. And I like what you said about Hayden Wisniewski as well, because we've seen him thrive this year as a starter and this year as a reliever. It's fascinating and intriguing to think about what they're going to do with these guys. And, you know, I think for the first time, I mean, even the first time in a long time, you have a manager who seems to have just as much or maybe even a little more power than the GM. At least they're talking about working in conjunction. Clearly, that wasn't the case at the end of the Joe Maddon era. And I always felt like with David Ross, especially in the beginning, part of that was, yeah, we're going to give you this job, but we're going to hold your hand a little bit. And I'm sure that Ross was happy to accept that. Going to take a break here in a second. One more text here. Please address that idiot's point about the Bears not addressing the offensive line in every year. Well, that's a good point. I mean, they did bring in Ryan Bates. They did bring in Coleman Shelton. They did draft Darnell Wright last year. So I'm a little concerned about the Bears at center, though, at this point, going into the rookie series for Caleb Williams, that they don't know exactly who their center is going to be. That scares me just a little bit. And that will conclude our football talk for today.
You switch the samples.
So you can make Provasic. I understand that baseball people get very offended on the Matt Spiegel hit and run show when you try to slide in a little, because sometimes the Bears overtake hit and run. I understand that's a problem. So that will be it for me on Bears Talk for today.
Very sensitive subject.
Oh, yeah. I get it. I understand. Hey, man, I love baseball too. But, you know, Bears. Coming up next, we've got Matt Spiegel live from Wrigley Field. It's his show. He will join us next on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Go to Bellinger. Linesman down the left field line. That's going to be a base hit. It goes toward the corner. It's going to be a ground rule double. A ground rule double for Cody Bellinger. There's the potential winning run at second base with one away, bottom of the ninth inning. A smash down the opposite field line in left.
Allison Chains always sounds good to me. Cubs go on to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 1-0 out of Wrigley Field. Shota Imanaga, excellent. Christopher Morel with a nice piece of hitting, just ripped it up the middle. And Cody Bellinger chugging around third base to score the only run of the game. Cubs 26-21, getting ready to rematch with the Pirates today at 120. Jameson Taillon 3-1 with a 161 against Mitch Keller 4-3 with a 3.93 ERA. Pregame for Cubs and Pirates begins at 12:45, and the man who will be performing that pregame is the one and only Matt Spiegel. He is the host of this very show, Hit and Run, which I'm filling in today. It also says right here on the sheet put together by Sean Sears Spiegs, it says, accomplished musician, vocalist, sports broadcaster, and in his home you'll find many leather-bound books and a musk of rich mahogany.
Yeah, the leather-bound books, not true anymore. Been some downsizing of the book collection. But Mark Grody, thanks for hosting. And whenever I'm asked to be a guest on my own show, I don't feel like I have the right to say no. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be very awkward if you said, no, not interested. I don't really like that show. I'm on that show, but I don't particularly like that show.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful day here at Wrigley Field, and we're having bagels in the booth. Ron Coomer and Jim DeShays are here. Paul Zerang is here. Who's got it better than us?
Oh, that's awesome. Say hi to all of those three guys. They are spectacular.
Agreed.
Zerang up there, man. He is an ace. Pat and Ron, absolutely love it, man.
It should be a tremendous day, and we'll see what Jameson Taillon can do to back up a phenomenal effort from Shota Imanaga and that thrilling finish that you were talking about. The whole place kind of buzzing about both Shota and the start and also that finish. Can I tell you something that I love about baseball? I love that Shota Imanaga's start. Obviously, it's the best first nine starts to begin a career in terms of ERA by anyone in the history of the game, beating Fernando Valenzuela in 1981. The other guy who's up there, and that name was bandied about a little bit yesterday, was Dave Ferris of the Red Sox. It's Boo Ferris, and I know the name because my dad was 12 in 1945 and absolutely loved Boo Ferris and that team. And Boo Ferris, he won two games of the 1946 World Series, and like texting your 91-year-old father about Shota Imanaga and Boo Ferris on a Saturday afternoon in May,
man,
is pretty good. Gets pretty good.
They're not right booing. Now. They're saying boo.
They're cheering for a man named Boo. Yeah.
That must have been very complicated.
I think so. Well, he was good.
Yeah.
So he never got booed.
Yeah.
So, you know, that must have worked out in his favor. But anyway, none of that is why you called.
What was the buzz in the clubhouse today after yesterday's victory with the players?
Saw Nico Horner, who said, I'll be getting in there soon. And
okay.
We've already heard from Craig Counsell. They're targeting Tuesday, so Nico will get the benefit of the off day tomorrow after this last off day today. So Cubs hopefully not going to be a man down. Just watched Dansby Swanson here take BP and run to first a couple of times. So you wonder if Tuesday you're getting both of the starting middle infielders back. It's certainly possible. And if not, Tuesday for Dansby, maybe a little bit later in the week. But that would be obviously very welcome for an offense that is extremely cold at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always other than sitting guys down and kind of resetting them, it's always complicated when guys aren't hitting because you feel like eventually they just will start hitting because of the track record. And one of the things that one of our topics today is, you know, the way I characterize the Cubs have been good, but they don't have their bleep together yet. Like, just because of whether injuries, ineffectiveness, every single possible thing has happened to the Cubs this year in dramatic fashion. And the question that I've been asking is once July hits and August hits, when you're really in the heart of the competition of the season, if this team is back together, injuries in place, what do you think it is capable of relative to the fact that they've managed to be five games over 500 with all that is going on?
Yeah, it feels like we've been in this space now for a few weeks, Mark, where we're all looking around and saying, you know, 16 guys have been on the injured list, everything that has gone wrong, and here they are still decent, and that all bodes well. And it's true that it bodes well, but you want to hit July and certainly August and September knowing who you are. And I don't think this team knows who it is just yet. Certainly in the bullpen, they know they've got a really good starting rotation. Even with the injuries, people have stepped up. And, you know, some question at five with Hendricks, but maybe that's Jordan Wicks, or maybe it's all six of them for a little while. But what role is Ben Brown going to have in that bullpen? You know, are they going to go out and get somebody? Are roles going to churn a little bit more as they sort of sort out what they are? Is Luke Little the lefty, or is Mark Leiter really the de facto lefty because of his reverse splits? And will they play cleaner defensively? Because we've assumed that they will since they did last year, and that's kind of the ethos of the org, but they're not. So if you don't do that, then you really got to be explosive offensively to cover some of that stuff up, and they're not. So, but look, it's a healthy organization, it's a smart manager, and it is a group of guys who know how to play hard and how to adjust. So it all does bode well, but as the clock keeps ticking, the patience is harder to have for them to play like the full bloom of themselves that we believe they can be.
I thought maybe the most important part of the game yesterday, look, Shota Imanaga was important, and that was spectacular, and it's amazing what this guy is doing, getting that ERA down to 0.84. But Mark Leiter coming in the eighth, striking out the side, and then Hector Neris in the ninth with two strikeouts, both fist pump inducing moments for that bullpen, just a little point in time because of all the breakdowns this bullpen has had this year, to get those two guys doing what they did yesterday, especially Neris, I thought was incredibly important.
Yeah, and Neris has a long track record of being very good, and I know that people have been scared of him. You've got the heart attack Hector thing that Hayden Wesneski gave us, but I don't know. Like, I watch Neris, and I feel like that dude just battles and finds a way to get out of a mess, even if he creates it sometimes. So he doesn't make me as nervous as some others. But yesterday, him with that perfect ninth was big. And here's a tease. Be listening to pregame with Bruce Levine has more on Hector. Apparently addressed the team after the game yesterday, and it was emotional and impactful. So we'll be hearing from another player talking about Hector in Bruce Levine's report as part of pregame.
Oh, that's fantastic. We're talking to Matt Spiegel, who will be hosting the pregame starting at 12:45. He'll be doing the fifth inning of play-by-play and then performing the postgame afterwards. So Spieg's coming up in a little bit, 12:45, to get this thing going. And you mentioned Jameson Taillon, 3-1, 161. And look, he was up and down last year, injured to begin this year, but terrific. How big would it be if that guy, you know, shows, you know, acts like he has prior to last year in his career? That's a really good product.
Yeah, no, I think so. And let's not forget this. Today's against his old team, and you know, the whole league, and certainly the Pirates, a buzz about their young pitchers. Bailey Falter was good yesterday. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Skeens the day before, and Jared Jones on Friday. There was a time when Taillon was in that farm system along with Tyler Glasnow and Garrett Cole, all of them kind of arriving at the same time. So, you know, he's been that guy before. And now after a long career and a good run in New York, even with the struggles last year, he knows who he is and he knows how to be the best version of himself. I think he's been terrific this year, other than that, you know, obviously that choppy Braves start. But he would give the Cubs three starters if he can qualify in terms of the inning total. Three starters with an ERA under two to go along with Assad and Shota. And that's where Jameson Taillon is. So I expect a real good deep run by him today.
What's your take on Kyle Hendricks? What do you do with Kyle Hendricks?
You keep giving him shots because you have to have Wesneski and Brown in the bullpen. So you keep giving Kyle a chance. And you hope to get, you know, hope to get five innings out of him. And maybe he can figure out a little something as he goes from start to start. It's when Jordan Wicks gets back that you might see Kyle skipped every once in a while, or you may them see them go to six man. And really, we say six man rotation, but really what we're saying is 5 days rest for pitchers.
Sure.
You know, Pirates just did it for Skeens. They're trying to do it for Shota often. So that being the goal, that means there will be a spot necessary, and you'd rather have that in that sixth start, rather that be Hendricks than Wesneski, who can help you as a bulk guy out of that pen.
And then, you know, Justin Steele, I'm personally not worried about him, despite having struggled in his last couple of starts. Is there anything that you think that he's done differently? Any concern about Justin Steele?
I haven't done a deep dive on some of, like, you know, the stuff that might give you a window in terms of the pitch shape or sequencing or anything like that. All I know is dude was giving up rockets a couple of games in a row.
Yeah.
A lot of rockets, even the outs, you know, some deep flies, obviously some bombs and some doubles. So a little concerning to see all those, you know, all those barrels off Justin, but I'm not sure if folks smarter than me have figured anything out.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, just because his velocity is all still there, we're seeing that location seems a little bit off. And for the first time, like watching him, something I never really noticed last year, he looked flustered in his last start.
Yeah.
And that was because of the wind. Like even on an out, he looked like kind of shaking his head. And I'm thinking, you pitched a year and a half at Wrigley Field. You've got to know that sometimes baseballs get up into the jet stream. But I don't remember him ever really kind of like having that shake your head moment on the mound last year.
Yeah, I don't either. I'll ask around.
Okay.
I'll ask around first in this room if the cream cheese and the bagels have kept
Jamie
shake. Oh, yep, still here.
Oh,
Jamie's
beautiful.
Still here. So I have some of the finest Cubs minds. yeah. They're hovering. Some of the finest Cubs mind are hovering near bagels.
Is there salmon in that? There's got to be lox in there. So I don't
there's
know.
There's no salmon.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Sorry.
Poor Pat. Asparagus? No
Mark
asparagus?
Brody making me feel bad. There's no cucumbers, no tomatoes. I know. Coombs says south side the bagel is plenty, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like
you accept the bagel happily and move it along.
Oh, you know, Sundays were always my favorite in the booth because the breakfast it was brunch, so I'd load up on, I'd go with the scrambled eggs, a big plate of bacon, sausages,
nice.
And about 15 cups of coffee.
Yeah, I'm on cup three. So
yeah.
You know, be tuned in just to see how buzzed pregame can be. Then I'll try to settle it down for the fifth inning when I get on the moving train briefly.
Oh man, I know that you're going to be pumped up for that, dude. What else is cooking on the pre? I said you got Bruce with the backstage medium. Did you get a player interview or a broadcaster interview? What do we got cooking on that pregame speak?
Let's get to know Porter Hodge.
Oh
brand
yeah,
new Cubs reliever. Shall we?
I love it.
Yeah, we'll talk to Porter. Hodge and get to know him from a personality standpoint, and we'll dive deep on the fastball as well.
I love it, Spiegs. I'll let you get back to your baseball booth roundtable in there so you guys could figure everything out to begin this game today.
Grody, you're the best. Remember, there's always a bagel for you in my heart.
Oh, okay? Yeah, I'm sure. Bring that bagel in whenever you get a chance. Thanks, Spiegs.
All right, Mark.
Yep, see you later. That is Matt Spiegel, who will be doing pre and post today for the Cubs. Like he said, it'll be the fifth inning. Yeah, man, like some of the fun times in that Cubs booth, just hanging out. Just once a lot of your pregame work is done, just hang out, kick it, talk to some baseball guys. And then you always have people dropping in, like from the other booths that will pop in and say hi. And, you know, Ron Coomer knows everybody. So that's always, it's a fun vibe there at Wrigley Field on Sundays for sure. When we return, we're going to talk some more White Sox and their loss to the Yankees yesterday, 6-1. But a very, very prominent former White Sox player threw out the first pitch in New York at the White Sox-Yankees game yesterday. We'll tell you who it was and tell you all about him coming up next here on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
This is baseball here. They know it there. And 3-2 pitch. Oh, he gets him to go. And the White Sox, El Duque, goes charging off as well he should. He comes in with the bases loaded and gets Veritek, Graffinino, and Damon. Just enough. 4-3 Chicago.
One of the most important pitching performances in White Sox history. That is not hyperbole. That, which you just heard right there, forgot that Chris Berman was doing those games on ESPN. I never heard the broadcast because I was there. But that was, ladies and gentlemen, the 2005 American League Division Series in Boston, the White Sox and the Red Sox, Game 3. That was in the sixth inning. The White Sox were up 4-3 was the score. And here's the thing. El Duque, Orlando Hernandez, came in, replaces Damaso Marte, bases loaded, nobody out. He comes in this tense situation, Fenway Park. He retires Jason Veritek. He retires the former White Sox, Tony Raffanino, and then goes full count with Johnny Damon before he struck him out. And the rest is history because they win that series in Boston, do the White Sox. They go on to Anaheim, where I got to sit in the on the right field side, just about 10 rows up from first base. That was my favorite press box of all time, covering the White Sox and Angels in the American League Championship Series in 2005, because overflow media, they don't have room, especially a ballpark like that that was around for a long time. They do not have enough room to accommodate all of the media. So just like at Wrigley Field, they literally would put us outside. And it was it's Anaheim. It was just gorgeous. And they set you up a little table in the stands. And it was great. It was beautiful. Covering baseball, essentially, in the stands. I don't know, to be locked in a press box with glass, you know, shielding everything. That was fantastic. So, yeah, the Sox win the ALCS. And then they, of course, win the World Series in Houston, and they were champs that year, and they absolutely don't get there that year without El Duque. And I bring all this up just because it was Orlando Hernandez who threw out the first pitch yesterday at the White Sox-Yankees game. So, yeah, I mean, that's where he started his career with the Yankees. Apparently, he works with some of the young international players with the Yankees, so he is employed by the New York Yankees and a fan favorite there as well. And the White Sox will never forget what Orlando El Duque Hernandez did in 2005. That was just a blast. It was completely improbable. For that game, by the way, in Boston, you know, with Fenway Park being the oldest ballpark, and you talk about not being able to accommodate the media, they had me along with probably about 50 other media members for that series in the cafeteria. In the cafeteria watching the game on television. So didn't even get to sit, you know, actually see the live action. It was sitting there, you know, it's fine. I mean, you don't get the proper ambiance and you don't get to see all the things that you want to see right away. But that was definitely an experience. I remember talking to Peter Gammons a lot, you know, obviously being very close with the Boston Red Sox and covering them. I was working for WBBM at the time, but that was just all the way around was an absolutely unique experience. Then on to Houston, all my pregame stuff, I did sitting out in the bleachers in Houston doing live reports for BBM. That was cool. But they did have a relatively new ballpark then. They had a very accommodating press box, and what a fascinating, impressive, I was going to say improbable, but that was a talented White Sox team. I don't take anything away from what they did. I take away from what they did in the years preceding that year. But It was great, and the Orlando Hernandez, just a great White Sox moment. I got another history thing on the Sox, but let's bring it back to the present day because we've been talking about Kyle Hendricks. We have a couple people waiting. So, John in Logan Square, bless you for your patience. You are on the Score. How are you, sir?
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for taking my call, Mark. I wanted to mention a couple things kind of on like a higher strategic sort of level. I think the Cubs have kind of figured out a couple things. One is a new market inefficiency. I think as you're seeing ball clubs focus on velocity from their pitchers, right? Look what we just saw from Cease all the way through the Pirates rotation. The Cubs don't have a lot of those guys. And the Cubs also aren't seeing a lot of injuries as well. And I think when you look at a Schemes, you look at some of these other folks, they're going to get hurt.
Yeah, Jared Jones, another guy with the Pirates.
Yep. Yeah, they're going to get hurt. It's unfortunate, but it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's something that's going to happen. And so they got guys like Assad and Wisniewski and Shota, and these guys know how to pitch, and they're athletic, and they're giving them innings, and they're winning games. Additionally, I think, you know, the partnership with Council is really valuable because the money they spent to sign him doesn't count against their payroll. And he's basically like hiring another front office executive,
totally,
one who gets to work in the dugout. And so I think they know what they're doing. I think they have a model that we're not sure we understand because we don't see the big picture. But I think they're successful, and I think what they're doing right now is all part of their larger plan.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a really good call. One of the things that I've wondered about Jed Hoyer and Craig Counsell is, although I fully believe that these two guys get along swimmingly, I wonder what the things are that they disagree on. If Craig Counsell is, as they have said, like one with the front office and has a big say, and that's part of why Jed Hoyer, you know, hired him. I mean, he was transparent about that. And they have said, of course we disagree. Craig Counsell has said that on these airways. I am curious as to, because there's a lot of fine points with this Cubs team this year, a lot of debatable places. And one of the big ones right now, I wonder what the talk was with Alzolay. Was it Craig Counsell's decision to continue to use him in high leverage? Was Jed Hoyer saying, come on, you got to give this guy another try? I'm not saying that it ever got ugly or anything, but I do wonder, like, sometimes what the balance is between those two guys in the decisions that they are making. And I hadn't really thought about the fact that the Cubs don't really have a blow-you-away guy who is a legit starter, like in terms of velocity, and that you could, as you're doing, making the point that maybe there isn't that chaotic injury for the Cubs because of that, because Javier Assad is not going to blow you away. Same with Shota Imanaga. I mean, it's like that. They're not slow pitch. Like Justin Steele throws 94. We know about Kyle Hendricks. Tyone can get it up there a little bit as well. But your point is well taken, except for the fact that at least three of these guys have been injured at some point in time, but not the catastrophic injury for sure. So I get you, and that's a really good call. 312-644-6767 if you want to jump in here. The other White Sox thing, as we go back and forth seamlessly here, let me take you back now. We took you to 2005. Let me take you back now to 1990, ladies and gentlemen. You know I love the 90s. I went to an event the other night at the Chicago History Museum on Clark over there. It was about the 1990 White Sox, and there was a book that was written called Last Comiskey. That was a wild year for the White Sox. That was the final year of Old Comiskey Park, 1990, and it was an improbable season. That was when the White Sox were in the American League West, and you had the Bash Brother Oakland A's that were the class of the division. They were a loud, muscular team that we all knew about, but out of nowhere came the Chicago White Sox that year. They had been terrible in the years leading up to 1990. I mean, really awful. And then all of a sudden, the White Sox are right there with the Oakland A's that year. Sox ended up being 94-68, second place to the Oakland A's in that American League West. And unfortunately for the White Sox, that was when there was no wild card. So when they were eliminated, it was absolutely heartbreaking for White Sox fans because they have nothing to show for it. 94-68, and you've got to go home. So that's one of those things. Everybody complains about baseball and rules changes and all of that. What a win the wild card has been. I mean, you just can't do that. It's amazing it took as long as it did. You can't have a team be 94-68 with absolutely nothing to show for it. So I just thought that that was indicative of the of what is going on with baseball and with the White Sox that year. Who was on those White Sox teams? You had a couple of the guys that were there that were at this event. Jack McDowell was there, Ron Kittle, and then Don Paul. Don Paul, the local product, he was one of the important bullpenners on that team as well. But of course, you remember Black Jack McDowell, and he was great. You know, he's got opinions, man. You know, and he was ripping on the idea that, you know, all the injuries, and he says is because everybody's trying to throw too hard. But the lineup for the White Sox back in 1990, Lance Johnson was your center field. This is the opening day lineup, actually, that I'm looking at. Lance Johnson, one dog, playing center field. Scotty Fletcher, the second baseman and batting second. Dan Bernstein's favorite baseball player of all time, Yvonne Calderon, was batting third and playing left field. He was good. Greg Walker, he wasn't just a hitting coach, kids. He was the cleanup hitter and the DH, and he did play some first base as well. Carlton Fisk was the catcher and batting fifth. Carlos Martinez was the first baseman on opening day. Six hitter, Robin Ventura playing third base. Sammy Sosa was the right fielder. He was the Panther back then and batting seventh. Ozzie Guillen was the starting shortstop and batting eighth. And then on that day, they had Melito Perez as the starting pitcher for the White Sox that day. Bobby Thigpen was on that team. Scott Radinsky was on that team. Wayne Edwards on that team. Greg Graybeck, just going through some of those names. The Oakland A's were stacked back then because you had McGuire, you had Willie Randolph, Walt Weiss, Carney Langsford, Ricky Henderson, Dave Henderson, Jose Canseco. Harold Baines was on that Oakland A's roster as well. So, yeah, very, very impressive event the other day. The book was written by Ken Smoller. So shout out to everybody. Tom Scherer was up there hosting the thing. He did a fantastic job. Nancy Faust was out there with the organ playing. So it was one of those events. I didn't know what I was getting into, and it was just absolutely fantastic. They had this great documentary that they played. So I learned a lot, and I learned just how emotional that season was in 1990 for Chicago White Sox fans. Coming up next, we are going to talk to Paul Sullivan, sports writer for the Chicago Tribune. I bet he remembers that 1990 White Sox team, and I know he was covering Orlando, El Duque, Hernandez. Actually, maybe he wasn't back then. He was probably all over the Cubs. But we will talk to Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune next. I'm Mark Grody, filling in for Spiegel on Hit and Run on the Score.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.